from KQED.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. After two housekeepers came forward a year ago to reveal that the Trump Organization hired undocumented workers at its resorts and golf courses, the Washington Post began investigating how widespread the practice is and how the workers are treated by a president who made a key pillar of his presidency cracking down on immigrants living in the country illegally. This week, reporters David Farenthold and Joshua Partlow published their comprehensive piece, and Joshua Partlow joins me now. Welcome to Forum.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. I think what makes Trump's reliance on the work of undocumented immigrants so striking is, of course, the fact that he's denounced their very presence in this country. Joshua Partlow, can you just remind us of some of the statements and policies the president has made regarding illegal immigration?
Well, I think, from the moment he launched his campaign in 2015, this issue was central to what he was trying to do as president, stopping illegal immigration into the United States, building the wall across the U.S.-Mexico border, changes to how people are allowed to apply for asylum, where asylum seekers are kept after they've applied, in this case now back in Mexico, separating families from their parents, children from their parents. So there have been a lot of changes, and it's been a pretty striking difference for immigration policy.
And we do have a cut from the president. This is during the campaign in June of 2016, as he is talking about making crackdowns on illegal immigration and trying to make that a centerpiece of his message.
On immigration policy, America First means protecting the jobs, wages, and security of American workers. Whether first or 10th generation, no matter who you are, we're going to protect your job. Because let me tell you, our jobs are being stripped from our country like we're babies.
And, of course, the campaign trail was also where he assailed immigrants from Mexico as criminals, rapists. And yet what you found is that so many of the people he hired at his organizations hailed from Mexico.
Yeah, that's right. I've talked to, so far, 48 people from Latin America, mostly from Central America and Mexico, who have worked illegally without the proper paperwork at the Trump Organization over the years, going back about two decades. It's been quite widespread so far. We found people who've worked at 11 of his golf courses and resorts and doing all sorts of jobs from the greenskeepers at the golf courses to the maids and housekeepers, the kitchen staff, the stonemasons, people on construction crews. So it's been pretty widespread, and in some cases, the workers were even essential and instrumental in building the physical golf course.
Yes, instrumental in building the physical golf course. And then also deeply enmeshed in the Trump's family's lives. You describe them as like a shadow family. It almost felt like in some of the interactions that the undocumented housekeepers had almost like a Downton Abbey-style relationship in terms of intimacy and really knowing the Trump family.
Yeah, I think that's what's really interesting about the relationship here is how intimate it was and how a lot of the people that were undocumented workers for the president and his family and for the company had these jobs that put them in close proximity to the family. They cleaned the private villa of President Trump and his wife, First Lady Melania Trump. The children, Ivanka and Eric and Don Jr., and often watched over the grandkids and got to know the in-laws, the parents of Melania Trump. And so they knew the preferences, they knew the particular nature of how the Trump family liked to have their houses cleaned and how what they like to eat and how they like to have their food prepared. And so they were very much always around.
Which raises the question, of course, is if the president feels that they are such a risk to public safety, why he would have them in such close proximity. Why would he do this, Joshua Partlow? Why would he hire undocumented immigrants to play such an instrumental role in his organizations?
I think he, uh, when he when he has addressed this issue, and this year when we and others have asked questions about it, he hasn't been very direct about his response. But one thing he did mention a few months ago was that, you know, I wasn't aware of it. I'm not running the company now. But from what I understand, this is how everybody does it in this industry. So, you know, if that's the case, I mean, I assume undocumented workers are common, and we know they are common at golf courses and hotels across America. So, you know, I think on one hand, maybe it was that is partly explains it. I think also it's one of the stories we did about the employees up at the Westchester Golf Club that the president owns is. There were a lot of complaints there about low pay, about a lack of benefits, about working overtime hours and not getting paid for them, about basically being the undocumented workers feeling they were being shortchanged systematically. And they more than two dozen of those employees have spoken to the prosecutors in the New York State Attorney General's office, and we were told last week that inquiry is ongoing, although there doesn't seem to be, I mean, nothing official has resulted from it yet. But so, you know, I think it's, as is common in the United States, I think undocumented workers are often taken advantage of in lots of ways.
Well, we do have a cut from Dario Angulo. He worked at the Trump National Golf Course, not in Westchester, but in Bedminster. And he started the job in 2000. Oh, I'm sorry, Westchester in Bedminster. And he started the job in 2002. He was a farm worker from Costa Rica. And at the club, apparently, he operated heavy machinery. This is video from The Washington Post. And I'd like to play a little bit of Dario Angulo and ask if you could translate what he's saying.
La jornada era un poco dura porque trabajábamos siete días. Al llegar ya, cuando se hizo más el mantenimiento, era un poco más manejable los horarios, pero de primero sí trabajaban muchas horas, trabajábamos cerca de unas 16 horas, ya apenas nada más con almuerzo, que era lo que los daban. Y no era por dar quejas, sino la obligación era el trabajo nada más y ya era el trabajo terminado. No podíamos como decir, no teníamos... En ese tiempo no teníamos la opinión para decir si algo les gustaba o no les gustaba.
And so what is Dario telling us there, Joshua Park?
So he's talking about how the schedule, the daily, the hours he worked were difficult and demanding. He talked about how he worked 16-hour days and that he didn't feel like he was in a position to really complain about the working conditions if there was something he liked or didn't like. And so that was I talked to Dario down in Costa Rica in a little mountain village where he lives, and it was a pretty amazing scene because when we found him, he introduced us to several other workers who had also helped build the Bedminster Golf Course. This is up in New Jersey that the president visits regularly. And they had been the heavy machinery operators and on the maintenance crew, actually carving the holes out of the horse country up there in that part of New Jersey and doing a lot of the maintenance and greenskeeping work. And, you know, all up and down this village were people who had worked for the Trump organization and had now returned to Costa Rica. And it was interesting because many of them looked back pretty fondly on that experience. I mean, like Dario was mentioning, it was very difficult and very demanding, but it also gave them a kind of a step up and helped them buy land and build houses. And you can tell that the former employees, Trump organization employees and people who've worked in the United States were a little bit better off than a lot of their neighbors.
I was struck by a line in one of the pieces that you've written because you have done pieces throughout the year, though this most recent piece that you published this week kind of pulls it all together. But in one of them, you say that using undocumented workers brought the president and his organization a double advantage, an economic advantage and a political advantage. Can you explain what you mean by double advantage?
Well, I think, you know, the economic advantage would be that he, you know, like I mentioned earlier, that the workers were were often paid a you know, lower wage and didn't have the benefits and the chance of promotion that a lot of the other employees had at these golf courses. You know, I mean, I think it's a political advantage for the president in the sense that, I mean, to, you know, to this, in the sense that this has become central to his message as a politician, and it, you know, has had a resounding sort of, I guess, reaction in this country, and many people are supportive of what he's saying on this.
So attacking illegal immigrants is essentially what his base, why he has so much support from his base to some extent.
Yeah, right. I mean, it seems like that's at least an argument one can make.
It was this exploitation and hypocrisy that basically was the last straw for the two women who first came forward to the Washington Post, correct?
That's right. They were, you know, since the campaign started, from what we've talked to of these former workers, the mood really changed within the company and within the courses and the various Trump properties for these workers. I mean, people were very nervous and worried and afraid about what was going to happen because they were essentially afraid they would be deported. I think that got worse when he became president and he started showing up to his clubs with Secret Service agents, and there was more scrutiny on who was around the president, and they would have to be handing their fake documents to you know, law enforcement, basically. So some people left those jobs and returned to their home countries in some cases as a result of that. And other people like Sandra Diaz and Vicky Morales that we write about in this story decided that they had to speak out about this and correct what they saw as a glaring hypocrisy of the president. And, you know, as Sandra said to me, you know, I am the living proof of this this issue. I was undocumented and I worked for the president, and I know dozens, if not hundreds, of other people like me in this situation. So she, I think, felt a very strong conviction to make that public. And then other people have spoken out, particularly once they've been fired. The Trump Organization said it did an audit after the initial story came out and then fired, we don't have an exact count, but at least 20 people. I suspect it's significantly higher at several golf courses. And then those people often wanted to share their stories, too.
Hmm. We're talking with Washington Post reporter Joshua Partlow about his investigation into how the Trump Organization employed undocumented workers. As its owner, President Trump assailed undocumented immigrants. How is this story landing with you? What are your reactions to what you're hearing? Are or were you an undocumented worker, or have you employed knowingly or unknowingly undocumented immigrants? Give us a call at 866-733-6786 with your thoughts and questions. Again, 866-733-6786. Post your comments on Facebook, Twitter, or email us at forum@kqed.org. You mentioned that many of the workers were fired, that the organization started to do a crackdown on people who submitted falsified documents. But the workers you interviewed, did they believe that the company knew all along that they were undocumented, that they hired them knowing this?
Yeah, that's one of the things that's really consistent across the board when you talk to the former undocumented workers at the Trump Organization, is that they feel that their supervisors and managers were fully aware of their immigration status, and that it would come up in jokes and conversations, and in some cases when promotions were denied, and in all sorts of situations. So what we haven't found, and we don't know if it exists, any kind of, you know, memos among management discussing this issue and that sort of thing, but the stories of the workers themselves are quite consistent. I think it's likely that lots of managers did know.
I want to play another clip. This is, again, from an interview recorded by the Washington Post. Margarita Cruz, she's from Mexico. She worked as a housekeeper at Trump National Golf Club for about 8 years. She was fired in January of this year, and She says that she was told that documents were not necessary in her case to even work at the club. Let's hear from her.
Como para que un día a otro te digan, ¿sabes qué? Esto se acabó. Y ya. Te cambian tu vida de un día a otro. Sin pensar si, cómo pueden ser tan crueles de decir simplemente ya.
And what is Margarita expressing there, Joshua Partlow?
She's talking about the her shock and sadness to be fired from one day to the next after so many years of service, and how essentially painful that was for her. In her case, she was a housekeeper at Trump's Westchester Golf Club in New York, and after the initial story came out, a executive at the Trump Organization, top human resources official, came to that golf course and basically called all the undocumented workers in one by one and summarily fired them. So that was basically presenting them this what I mentioned earlier about the audit. We've done the audit and we found your documents not to be legitimate, and so, you know, today's your last day. So and that happened to a lot of people.
Well, let's go to our callers. Rosa Maria in San Mateo, join us.
Yes, hi. I have a question for the reporter. I would like to know if you know, or if you, during your investigation, you found out whether those illegal immigrant workers were directly hired by the Trump office or business, or if they were hired by subcontractors. Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you, Rosemary.
Thanks. The workers that we spoke to were hired by the Trump Organization directly. They had they're paid by the Trump Organization. We saw their paychecks in as many cases as we could, and you know, we have heard that it's possible that they're using employment agencies at some of the properties now, and that might be a potential change from the past. But the workers that we interviewed were direct employees and hires of the Trump Organization.
Thanks, Rosemary, for the question. And so what kind of legal consequences? I mean, you touched on this, that there is an investigation, but what kind of legal consequences have any of the entities or the Trump Organization itself had to deal with as a result of this coming to light?
There haven't been very many. Since these stories started coming out, the Democrats in Congress have called on the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security to investigate the Trump Organization's hiring practices. We don't have any evidence that that has happened or any investigation like that has begun. And
this is even though the president has vowed to crack down on employers who knowingly hire undocumented immigrants and even to further encourage employers to hire American.
Right. And we haven't heard direct answers from the top DHS leadership, but when they address this obliquely, they say that we focus on the most blatant violators and the biggest companies that do this and that sort of thing. So it's the response seems to be it's not a high enough priority. And then there have been some state level inquiries as well at the in the New York State and New Jersey Attorney General's offices, but those have not concluded and at this point.
What have been the legal consequences for the women who came forward?
The women who came forward
initially,
lost,
I'm thinking of Sandra Diaz.
Yeah, Sandra. They lost their jobs for one. They Sandra had left the Trump Organization in 2014 and taken a job as a housekeeper for one of the members at Bedminster, and he was disappointed when her initial story went public, and so So she was fired from that job. And Vicky Morales essentially didn't return to work after the story came out at Bedminster. So, and Vicky has applied for asylum, and she's been granted a work permit, and is while that process plays out, which can take a long time, years, and Sandra is now a permanent resident in the U.S. because her daughter was born in the U.S. and is a citizen, so she has now legal status to be in the U.S., and she's basically become an activist and advocate on behalf of other undocumented workers and people in her position, and she's been traveling around meeting with other former Trump Organization employees and, you know, kind of organizing them when they talk to authorities and things like that.
But that said, one of the things that you point out is that both women have really suffered sort of emotional consequences. They've lost friends, family over this.
Yeah, that was one of the most interesting things to me about this dynamic, and is that a lot of other undocumented workers really felt angry, deeply angry and betrayed when they went public, and afraid, I think, worried that they had put other people at risk for deportation and had broken essentially a code of silence among undocumented workers. So longtime friends of both of them were very angry initially. You know, when you talk to them now, Sandra and Vicky, they say that some people who are mad at the beginning now have come around and support them, but other people still aren't speaking with them, and those relationships have broken.
Do they believe it was still worth it to come forward?
Yeah, they definitely do. They are really proud of what they've done and proud that, and happy, I guess, grateful that people listened and are paying attention to their stories, and that you know, to correct what they saw as a sort of a lie by the president, and they thought that was really important and still do.
Well, Jake writes, that's business. You can promise to pay someone, and if you don't have the money, you can escape having to pay them until they prove in court you owe them money. Lorraine writes, the saying, that's how it's done in the industry, doesn't really cut it as a justification for the practice of hiring undocumented immigrants, coming as it does from the mouth of one who is so virulently anti-immigrant. And let me go to caller Timothy in San Jose. Hi, Timothy.
Yes, Joshua, some people have said that the answer to this quandary of knowing if you're actually employing undocumented immigrants is the E-Verify program. Are you familiar with the E-Verify program? Did you put it in your Washington Post article and discuss whether false documentation defeats E-Verify every time? And does the Washington Post colleague arm of the operation, Amazon, do the Amazon warehouses and fulfillment centers also have this problem?
Joshua Partlow?
Well, yeah, on the E-Verify question, it's a good point. The E-Verify, it's a federal program that employers can send in the documents they receive from job applicants and have it verified by the government whether they're valid. The Trump Organization was not a member of the E-Verify system at the beginning of the year, at least according to the E-Verify's own searchable database on their website. But after some of these stories started coming out, they enrolled all their golf courses in that system. So as far as I know, right now they're all they're compliant, or they're enrolled in that system.
And is it a system that's easy to trick?
I'm probably not the best one to answer on that. Mm-hmm. I think I've heard that it's possible to do that. I don't know all the details about how one tricks that system. So, you know, from what I've talked to some ICE officers about this issue in general, and you hear that, you know, employers don't need to be forensic specialists. They don't need to examine these documents in incredible detail and test them. And but if it is a, you know, on its face, a, you know, a Social Security card, you know, written in pen or something, you know, if it's a blatant falsified document, then I think it is more of the responsibility of the employer. But yeah, I mean, the E-Verify system, I think the program would tell you that it's pretty reliable.
So why don't you think the president, at least thus far, has really suffered any political consequences for his organization's use of undocumented labor?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think I don't know if this, you know, there have been some articles written by other publications I've seen this year where they interviewed Trump supporters about this issue and whether it concerned them. And I was kind of surprised to read some of the quotes about how much they were concerned about it.
Hmm.
So, you know, I don't, maybe there may be other consequences or, you know, in the future, but I think,
what have they said? What has,
well, that,
them?
That, yeah, that, I mean, just the points that, you made earlier about it being hypocritical and them being frustrated that he would do this given how much, how much importance he places on this issue and how it's such a big problem that needs to stop. I don't know. I think I also think when you talk to some people about why Congress hasn't done more or been more vocal about this issue, I think you hear that, you know, it is an issue that crosses parties and that there are, you know, business owners of all political persuasions who are hiring undocumented workers. So it's something maybe people don't want to look too closely at.
Yes, well, there have been repeated calls by Democrats in Congress for the Department of Homeland Security to investigate the Trump Organization, but do you see that going anywhere?
So far it hasn't. It's hard to say. I mean, I wouldn't expect anything imminently.
Joshua Partlow, reporter for the Washington Post, who investigated how the Trump Organization employed undocumented workers as President Trump assailed undocumented immigrants, and the experience and consequences of the women who initially came forward last year. Thank you for your reporting.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to our listeners for their questions and comments. We've got an hour on Joy of Cooking next, so stay with us for that. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.